Punters and dribblers, as always, we're brought to you by the greatest multivitamin ever conceived by man, Good Day. Now, the reviews continue to flow in thick and fast.
Have you got that one from the other day?
Yeah, can I read it out?
Yeah, read it out.
It's so good. It's actually fucking unbelievable. What has been really nice, Tom and I were reflecting on this the other day, is just how much people are finding it
beneficial to their
massively
life.
Beneficial to their life. I know that at the start there would have been a lot of cynics out there going, these cunts are full of shit, they don't know what they're doing, and you couldn't be more wrong, which just brings joy to my little heart and my little soul. Now I want to get up this absolutely elite review,
and we do appreciate the reviews, obviously. Look, it's like the feedback is positive, so that's good. But just being able to hear how it's helping you and the different ways you're seeing benefits helps us know, I guess, the most tangible. Cause there's like tangible benefits and there's intangible ones, like energy, for example. You can feel an improvement in your daily energy, whereas then there's like nutritional benefits like liver health or your fucking immunity generally being boosted. Those are ones where you don't really notice that until maybe you're on it for a while, and you say you've got two young children in daycare who come home sick as fuck, and then you just don't seem to be getting sick where you used to get sick.
Life-changing. 5 stars. Big fan of Hello Sports, so my viewers are always going to be biased. I actually bought it for my wife. Didn't mention who it was by and just let her see how it went for her. Mum of 3 kids and runs her own busy business while I also work 7 on 7 off away. After 3 days, she was hooked. Improved late in the day fatigue and mood. Come day 7, she had forgot to take her Good Day. Her mother was visiting and said the wrong thing and she snapped. Instantly says, I'm sorry, I haven't had my Good Day. Next thing, the mum-in-law is now tasting it and they're walking around the house like they both just discovered fire and were the only ones to know about it. Good result. Even got some alone time with the added less fatigue. With her, not her mum. That would be weird. But a look into the future, I suppose. So it's out there working its ass off, which is fucking terrific. There are downsides to being the fastest selling multivitamin of all time.
Yeah.
And that's that in the last month in particular, sales have just gone fucking through the roof,
which we love.
Tripled, I think, Tom. So we basically got caught with our pants down a little bit and not enough stock on hand.
Yeah, pants down, cold, little doodles.
It won't happen again. That's a Hello Sport promise. However, we are likely to sell out in the next probably 4 or 5 days, roughly. We will have stock for those with subscriptions.
Yep.
So you will never miss out. If you're a subscriber, you're good. If you are a new subscriber as of when we sell out, or you're a new customer, you won't be able to purchase. Well, you can purchase it, but it won't arrive for about 3 weeks.
Yes. So from here, if you start subscribing, you basically just locking it in so that when it lands, then you're good to go and you're straight back on the train.
So you'll know, Punters and Dribblers, we'll do a bit of a thing on the Instagram when we do a sellout, and you'll notice on the website it'll flick from buy now to pre-order.
Yeah.
So that'll be the difference.
Listen, it's not ideal, but it also really just means that it's been successful beyond our wildest imagination, and you just couldn't have planned for it to go as well so quickly. So we're fucking horny for that. We got more as soon as we financially could, we fucking ordered more. And it's just the way that it goes, the production, again, when you're getting primo quality shit, it takes time.
And it's got to be tested multiple times. There's a bit of a process. We've sped it up as much as we can. It is what it is, punters and dribblers. Bear with us. So we'll let you know when it sells out. But again, it'll be sometime this week. Again, and subscribers,
dude,
you're all good.
It's funny.
You're all good.
We've been looking at it going, geez, we might have a couple of days here where we don't have any. We'll see. But, you know, we should be all right. And then just each day it keeps growing. And there's like, obviously you're fucking pumped for that. But then you go, oh, shit, it might actually be a little bit more. Maybe it's going to be a week where we won't have any. And you're like, oh, fuck, maybe it's going to be 2 weeks. Then on the weekend, Eddie's like, it could sell out within days. I'm like, oh, my God. God, fuck. Yes, great. Thank you all. But also, fuck.
Yep. So subscribers, you're good. We'll let you know when it sells out, and fucking good on you.
Get the fucking pre-order in though. It's clearly good shit. You don't want to miss it. Just become a subscriber and then you're fucking good to go.
BeGoodHealth.com.au, code Dribblers for 20% off.
You are listening to the Hello Sport Podcast.
What's up, punters and dribblers? Welcome back to All Talk for 2024, brought to you by the number one multivitamin in the game, Good Day. Daily multivitamins. They're changing the world.
Yeah, it is. And we thank Good Day for its support.
Yeah, we thank Good Day for reaching out and offering to sponsor All Talk.
Yeah. 85 five-star reviews and counting. The punter and the dribbler cannot get enough of it.
Thousands
obviously, the dribbler,
of dribblers help to change their nutritional health.
And people are foaming at the mouth. So why don't you give Good Day a try, and the proof will be in the pudding. Or the packet, or the sachet, as they say.
Don't say packet. Good Day, be good, begoodhealth.com.au is where you'll find it. Now, Eddie, I couldn't think of a better way to start off All Talk for 2024. And it wasn't something that, like, you know, it wasn't necessarily immediately on the horizon in my mind, but we've got the opportunity to speak to this man, the one and only Mitchell Pearce, who's had, you know, a storied rugby league career of ups and downs, smiles and frowns. And someone I've never actually met, but sitting across from the bloke, still in good nick.
He's in great nick. I'll be honest with the punter and the dribbler. Huge fan of Mitchell Pearce after this yarn.
Yep.
Fucking terrific bloke. Very honest, open, raw, bears his soul at certain points. We have a good laugh. A great man,
yep.
a terrific yarner, Tom,
yeah,
as well.
No, he is. He had good stories, and you can actually listen to more of those. He does a podcast now called Footy Talk with Todd Carney, out every Monday. You can find that where you get your podcasts. He's doing work calling footy for Triple M. He's back. He's in Australia, and he's ready to fucking rip and tear a very
positive way.
Positive and healthy way.
Puns and Dribblers, Mitch Pearce. You look great, man.
You do.
Thanks, boys.
You look really good.
This is actually our new setup as well. You're the first one in our new setup with these couches and shit. So, are you comfy?
Beautiful, yeah.
Do you like France?
I loved it, mate. Yeah.
South of France, unreal. Yeah.
Yeah. So where I was, so you got Barcelona. We were just on the border of Spain. So it's a place called Perpignan. So it's a bit more working class than like Nice and all that.
Yeah.
It's like right on the coast. So you got the beach. Beautiful, man.
And just going
lifestyle's
from, like,
easy.
That's though. What, like, going from the fucking, like, what I imagine is just the pressure cooker of the NRL, just to being like,
yeah. Well, footy was like, we had a good team, so we made the GF.
Yeah,
the actual footy itself, like, we train once a week.
Get once fucked. A week.
Well, you meant to train 2-3, but literally, like, going halftime, well, we'll kill it. Like, we're going good, so you know what I mean. It was a good environment. Everyone's happy.
Don't change a winning formula.
Yeah, well,
if you're winning,
half the time the coach would go in, he'd say, "Mate, you're a bit tight. Just rest up." So I hit the fucking beach half the time. Like, you're taking it serious.
But yeah.
It's just not all the other bullshit.
Yeah.
Around. It's good when you're like, if you come from NRL, we're used to that, and you're already like professional, and you go there, you're kind of in that frame of mind. So it's sort of.
So, as in, like, you're already.
Weight off the shoulders, you know what I mean? Yeah. It wasn't like.
Is that like you've already got that sort of professional approach, like generally speaking, or is it so that like you can sort of do what you need to do to be right?
Yeah. It's still professional, but it's just, there's no media. You know, especially in France, like they just leave you alone a bit. You can travel as much as you can.
That must have been such
go
a
go up to Barca for a night, just have dinner, relax. Like, it just gives you freedom.
Yeah.
You don't get that escape here, do you?
No.
Is that a
getting worse, man? It's like it's so busy here now.
Is it? You're a Catalan, all right?
Yeah.
Catalans?
Catalonians, they call them.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, is that, you know, one day a week training, stretching on the beach, is that a Catalans thing or is that a Super League thing?
Now, I think different clubs, like, run the systems different. Our coach was good. Like, he looked after. We had a fair few older boys. So
yeah.
It was still professional. Like, you're still training 2 or 3 times a week. But on the field, some days he'd just say to you, like, just rest up, boys. And that was his approach.
Yeah. Mm.
Some of the other clubs I know are full on NRL type standards. Like, I know Hull trained pretty hard, lots of wrestle. But, like, I hardly did a wrestle session in 2 years. So things like that. Bit of a weight off the shoulders, but when you're fit, you sort of had that conditioning before.
It was and you played 300 games already, so you knew how to wrestle.
Yeah, I was falling off tackles by the end of it. Legs were getting slow, but
do you think you needed that change, like just to? And I mean, Catalan specifically. Like, do you reckon you would have been way more off it if you'd gone to a Super League club where you had to be like where they treated it like NRL and like were way more intense? Do you think you needed to just get the fuck away from it all?
Yeah, the freedom was good. Like, even just. you know, just different culture, different languages, all that sort of stuff. I needed that. I was going to finish playing before I went. I had a bit of a rough year off the field and I was just burnt out and over footy a bit. Mm. And then off season, I was contemplating just giving it up, just finishing, moving on to the next thing. And then the opportunity came up. Jimmy Maloney retired. And I knew Steve McNamara, the coach from the Roosters days. So they kind of reached out. At the start, when you don't live overseas, you're like, fuck, that sounds massive to move. But I encourage anyone now to just go. Because once you go, you know, I mean, it opens up a whole different world for you.
Yeah.
And then, they kind of kept – first few times they called, I kind of knocked it back and then jumped on the opportunity. And then when I went – first year was a bit difficult to sort of get settled. But I had a couple of really solid mates there that, you know, brothers for life now. And brothers for life.
Terrorist organisation.
But we did heaps together. Michael McAlorum, an English, great English player over there. Absolute legend. Tyrone May, we went over at the same time. So we did a heap of travel together and had some good success on the field. And
was Napa over there as well?
Yeah, Naps was there the first year. He's a champion, Naps. We had a good time. So we moved in together at the start. Naps only did the 1 year there. He enjoyed himself.
I bet he did.
I heard.
Yeah, we had. You boys know Naps?
Yeah. He's a good man. I was at a wedding with him recently, actually. Yeah. He spun me a few yarns.
He's a weapon.
So then what was the, who'd you play in the grand final? You lost today.
Lost to Wigan, which was disappointing. I did my hammy the week before.
Oh, shit.
Couldn't kick properly going into the game. Any excuse? I can make excuses now. I'm finished.
Listen, we're big excuses.
But I was disappointed. Wigan, like over there, so Wigan, St. Helens, I think Leeds, they went on a bit of a dynasty for a period. But Wigan and St. Helens have basically win every comp every year, so it's either one or them. And then Catalan's the last sort of 4 or 5 years. They've done a really good job there since Steve Mack took over. Started to recruit heaps more quality players. So the Dragons have been up there a bit more, but... it's hard to beat Saints and Wigan over there.
Yeah, right.
And the footy over there, like north of England, we all love our footy, but it's mad playing there. Like the atmosphere, all the northerners are just knockabout type of people and they're just fanatics. So,
is it a different type of cold? Like you're living in the south of France, sun in your dick, just living your life. Like then you got to go and play in the north of England. Is it like, what the fuck? Is it freezing?
Yeah, it was difficult, but I sort of enjoyed it because you'd sort of go out there for warm-up and it just hit you. So it was like being in an ice bath.
Fully.
So you'd sort of be a bit edgy before the game and then it sort of woke you up.
Yeah, okay.
But as the season goes on, it actually gets pretty hot because you get the Europe summer. So you play through summer. So sometimes it's the opposite. You sort of prefer the start of the year where it's a bit colder. But the fans are mad over there and spent heaps of time in and around Leeds, Wigan, heap of the boys I played with, a couple of Sam Tompkins, Michael McAlorum I was speaking about. It's about 6 or 7 of the Northerners that were in my team, so spent heaps of time in and around Leeds.
How'd you find the footy over there? Like generally,
It's different standard.
That sounds like you're being nice. I can't.
It's like the top teams. It's a different style of footy. Like it's hard for a lot of boys that come from here. Like your first year, you got to adapt language, different stadiums, new team, and the standards. Like in NRL, you probably got more quality across the board. And the speed of the game's a lot quicker, so the style's a bit different. And you've got a lot of better players to rely on around you sort of thing.
Mm.
Or over there, it's just a different style. It's a bit more open. They encourage playing a bit more footy, that type of stuff. So, but the top teams, like St. Helens, I played them my first game. I couldn't believe how much. Like, they just wrestled the fuck out of you.
Yeah, right.
And that was a bit of a reality check, you know, like freezing cold, slippery ball, and you didn't get the same kind of ruck speed that you get back here. So that was interesting. But the second year we had a really good year. We had a great team over there. We just fell short, which was disappointing. So would have been nice to win to keep going back there, but still good times.
Was there any thought around sticking around? Like, were you always going to retire? Was there a thought of sticking around after you retire and like living over there, continuing your life over there?
Well, my missus is French.
Oh, nice.
So she's come back with me, but we'll definitely be spending plenty of time back over there. So she's from Perpignan.
Get that Euro visa.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So she'll probably hopefully ideally spend some time here and then spend plenty of time back there. Got plenty of mates there now and feels like home over there. So
yeah.
How's your French?
It's improving. I've spent heaps of time around Frenchies since I've had time off after footy, traveling and went to Bali and then a fair bit of Europe just with Frenchies.
But, yeah.
it's a good thing too, right? So you can speak a little bit, but when they talk too much, you can just shut off.
Yeah.
On the classic sleeper.
Yeah.
But it's a difficult language to pick up. The funny thing is when you go over there, majority of the team, like even the French boys, you're sort of forced to speak English because there's so many expats. I was a bit blown away when I went there because out of respect, we should be speaking their language. Yeah. It's their team and we're forcing them to speak English. It was a bit bizarre, but... like the head coach speaks English in most of the meetings.
Right.
There's a French assistant coach who's a great fella, but he speaks a fair bit of French during the meetings. We get frustrated, but you can't blame him. It is a French team.
Absolutely.
But
can you understand it? Like, are you pretty being over there and being like so immersed in it, or at least that it's all around you? Can you understand it? Like, what sort of level are we talking here?
Yeah, I'm all right.
You're all right.
Yeah, like the missus obviously speaks it. One of her friends has moved over as well, so they speak it at home. I just have trouble picking up stuff like that. I was shit house at school. Some people I reckon have that gift where they can speak three or four languages.
Yeah,
I wish I had it. When you're over in Europe, be mad just to be able to go to different countries and
pick it all up,
adapt straight away. But
my wife speaks Croatian, so I asked. She's like her first language is Croatian. Her and her mum speak it all the time, and I've been with her for fucking 16 years, and I know fuck all. And it's like a bone of contention in our household. Yeah. It's like, what the fuck? So I was interested to know how well you've done, doing way better than me.
Well, he's doing
but
a
I
lot
don't
better.
Live in Croatia.
You should give yourself some credit though. Well, you're essentially living in Croatia at home though, right?
So yeah, true.
Bonjour, ça va, qu'est-ce que tu fais?
Comment
ça va, exactly. Good, eh?
Très bien.
I know Je m'appelle Edward.
Yeah. And your accent's fantastic.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
You can get a baguette at the bakery with off the back of that.
Yeah. Shout out to Mr. Laforgue, my French teacher. Yeah, you seven.
One of the goats. So are you excited to come back? Like, is it nice to get back into Australia?
Yeah, it's been good. Picked up a bit of an opportunity with Triple M, so doing some commentary. Did my first game on Sunday, which was a good experience.
How'd you find it?
Yeah, it was good. It's mad. I thought when you retire, you sort of don't know how you're going to feel. If you're going to miss the game and that type of stuff, especially being over there. Obviously, like I said, there was heaps of freedom around footy. So coming back into the fishbowl here of NRL and that type of thing, didn't know what to expect. Went to the Roosters game on Friday night against South, and it was just good watching from a spectator's point of view. So I'm enjoying it. It's, you know, your respect for the players goes up tenfold as soon as you finish because everyone just looks so big and strong, and you wonder how you kept up for so long. But, it's been good coming back and just – getting into the next transition.
Yeah, so you've got Triple M, you're calling games, then you've got the podcast with Toddy.
Yeah, me and Toddy are doing
Footy Talk. I'll get the fucking proper name up. I do know. But is it called Footy Talk?
Footy Talk, yeah.
Footy Talk, yeah, right. So you guys do that on Monday?
Yeah, we're great mates through our footy days. And so it's been good, sort of aligned and worked out well. So we're doing that on Mondays. And me and Toddy got some ideas to do a bit of stuff around halves, some development in and around some young halves.
Nice.
And wouldn't mind doing a bit of coaching stuff as well. So
right. So you definitely want to stay around the game.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I wouldn't mind trying to open up to a few other things. I don't know what that is yet. I haven't got many other skills.
Find them.
Gotta find them fast. But yeah, staying involved. I'd love to do some, especially in the development stuff.
Yeah,
with some younger halves and stay involved with the game.
How much of your experience throughout your career, the highs, the lows, the up, like all that sort of shit. Like, how much of that, the lessons you've learned, like, is that something you want to impart on younger halves? Is that sort of where you're...
Yeah, I'd love...
As well as, obviously, the skill.
Yeah, I'd love to do some mentoring stuff. I made a big change. I don't drink anymore.
Really? How long's that been going for?
About a year and a half.
Oh, wow.
Well done, man.
So I just...
That's huge.
Yeah, it was massive. I sort of got... a group of mates, I said, Tyrone and Mickey sort of led the way over there for me. First year, I won't lie, I went pretty hard. Had plenty of good times. It was just honestly, I had an epiphany. I had a big night in Sydney one night when I came back, and just that same pattern that sort of just
fell back
my career
into
went a little bit. I was always focused on footy, but alcohol got in the way plenty of occasions, and had a big night and something just changed. I had this weird sort of wig out. They happen plenty of times, but had this weird wig out and something just, I just felt all this shame. For something just to change. And then ever since then I went back and then had probably the best year and a half of my life sober. So
really?
Spent, as I said, my two mates there, we did plenty of travel together. They were sober before me and, together we did it. You know, it was easy. When you got a group of boys doing it together, they sort of pushed each other and they were the big influences on me. And since then I've sort of come back and stayed on that path.
Was it difficult at first? Like, And, you know, like, as in, did you, was it a craving thing? Or, you know, how, like, you can associate, like, oh, you go out to dinner, you have wine or a beer or whatever. Like, was that just that initial process difficult? Like, I guess, you know, because it also helps alleviate maybe, like, social anxiety when you're out.
Yeah, I think you're right. A lot of it's that social anxiety. It's habit too, isn't it? Like, coming in as a young player as well, or just, I was always inclined to that way. I always loved a good time ever since I was a teenager. You always wanted to get up to no good. But I suppose... coming into footy, it was a big part of the culture. Coming in, having a beer, especially as a young halfback, you earn a lot of respect. Playing well and then having a drink with the boys, that's how you connected. And through my career, there's plenty of times I didn't drink. There was lots of times I'd stay off the alcohol during the season. Footy was always number one, but it was just that cycle. And different people can handle things differently. And for me, I've always just flipped out my personality and been a roller coaster. So yeah, I'm glad that I made the move and plenty of good things happening off the back of it.
How good's that? That's awesome. Well done, man.
Love that. That's great stuff. Yeah. So in terms of the coaching, are you working with any clubs at the moment, or are you just sort of finding your way now? You're back in Sydney.
I might be doing a bit of stuff with the Roosters, just with the development squad there. They got went in there the other day, actually, and gave Jared his 300th jersey, Jared Hargraves.
Oh, how good.
Nice. Yeah, it was pretty special. So caught up with a couple of people when I got back and got asked to go in and give Jared that, which was special. What a player he's been.
Did you have to, like, write a speech or some shit there? Like, what's that? Sometimes when you have to do, like, something in front of your mates, it's almost, like, way more intense than if you just have to speak to someone.
When I went in there, with the respect he's got, all the boys all ended up speaking before me. So Robbo spoke, and then all the boys jumped in and sort of said all their bits. So by the time I got up, everyone had sort of said everything I wanted to say. So it was a bit of a letdown. But he knows how much I love him, and... the respect I got for him, what a player he's been.
Like, I
don't think anyone's played 300 games harder than he has.
No way.
I heard someone say he probably would have played 400 if he hadn't been suspended so many times.
Yeah, he's just an animal. And everything he does around the club there, you know, everyone that speaks about him, you know, knows the influence that he's had all around the boys there and all that type of thing. So, yeah, that was good. But went back around there. A lot of the old boys... Boyd Corden's assistant coach there, Mitch Orbison and Jake Friend are doing all the development stuff there. So see what pans out there.
Did you almost come back to the Roosters when you were overplaying for Catalan and they almost brought you back?
Yeah, there was an opportunity to maybe come back, but my legs were getting slower and slower and slower. So,
so you're just like, nah.
Yeah, I honestly feel like I probably could have played one more season. Like, I was still playing decent footy over there. I know it's a bit slower in Super League.
Yeah.
But yeah, to be honest, I was just mentally just over that grind, and I was keen, especially going overseas and travelling and seeing so much other stuff that you can live your life and how you can live your life. It probably just made me realise there's other stuff, new path to take. So that made my decision in the end.
Is it true that Benji gave you a call, asked you to come back to the Tigers?
Yeah, he did.
How was that? Did you just sort of like...
Fuck, I'm retired.
Nah, bruh. Was that a quick conversation?
Well, that was during the year when I hadn't made my decision up. I won't lie, I was sort of taken back. I was in the south of France, you know, just getting through the days there and enjoying my footy there. And I thought I was done. Like, I thought I was a has-been, to be honest, here. And then when that came up, obviously I investigated it for a couple of days. It's a, you know, makes you feel good if someone wants you.
Yeah, of course.
And I was over there. I sort of, you know, thought about it for a bit. And then, you know, I was happy over there. I was committed to my teammates over there. Loving my lifestyle there. And but yeah, would have been interesting if that.
Obviously. Is there a part of the decision to not come back to Tigers specifically, like, that you can kind of be on a bit of a hiding to nothing? Like, it might be fun to come back and test yourself in the NRL, but, like, in a club that respectfully, at the time at least, were fucking shit. Like,
they got the spoon.
Like, you know, you're like, fuck, do I want to just come back and get the shit
kicked out? Not to say you wouldn't have taken him to the yard.
You might have brought him, yeah, exactly. But, you know, like, is there a part of that where you're like, I don't actually need that pressure?
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, I think I was getting closer to thinking it was going to be my last season. In my heart, I felt like it was going to be my last season. And then I was committed too, you know. I'm not someone who just gets up and walks away. So I was committed to my teammates. I had great friendships there. I loved the club there. I was committed to try and get us a premiership over there. We fell short, but we had a great year, great memories. So, yeah, that's probably why I didn't come back. But like I said, it's as a player, as anyone, it's good to get that validation that someone still wants you, especially when you're over there. So I appreciated the call and that type of thing. But And obviously dad played there too, so back in the 80s.
Oh, that's right, so of course.
There was that little thing of, oh, could I go back there and do 1 year?
Yeah.
Where dad played and that type of thing, but here I am retired.
I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah, of course.
Punters and Dribblers, we are brought to you by Neds. They are the betting platform of choice here at Hello Sport. Now, you can follow along all of our bets at the In The About Even private group on the Neds app. You can also follow our profiles. As I've been saying, my civilian bets are where I seem to be doing my best work. My About Even bets starting to improve. I can feel myself starting to improve. I did hit two on the weekend.
After back-to-back triple staked losses.
The triple staked losses for unit scoopers have absolutely cut to fucking the Tiger King. I may never recover from this, but the civilian bets is where you can see me getting my work, and that is on the profiles.
Good for you, Tommy. Ned's best in the business. Come join along. Join our About Even group if you'd like as
you
well.
You mean, you know, wow, Eddie, just you're just repeating me now, are you?
I didn't hear you say that.
You just where were you? Where were you?
Pixies.
Where were you, mate?
Pixies.
Full pixie stuff. So now you're just going to say, you're going to talk about the fucking profiles tab as well? You're going to talk about the About Even group? Yeah?
About Even group.
Yeah, how do you get in there?
That's what I said, Code Dribblers.
Oh, okay, there you go, good. Yeah. What's this ad for again?
Neds.
Oh, yeah, great point. Glad you're listening. Pixies. Pixie Simps. Shout out to Neds. We love you, Neds. We love you. Go Manly.
Now, you win some, you lose more. For free and confidential support, visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
Punters and Dribblers, there's 2 days left to be in the chance to play golf. Be in the chance? Be in with the chance to play golf at Shorty's with myself and Eddie. Buy a six-pack of Big Day Rosé at hallosport.shop. You will go in the running. We pick two winners from the month of April. But what are we doing month of May? Because we are working our way through the remainder of the most recent vintage. Got a couple left that we want to get rid of before we then turn all of our attention to the end of the year.
Just feeling generous, Tom.
We're feeling generous, and it's sale time.
We just thought, fuck it. If you buy a case and you use the code Manly, you get $50 off the case. If you buy two cases, you get $100 off.
Yep.
You get what I'm trying to say? Go to hallosport.shop. Bang, rosé on there, code Manly, $50 off a case. Pretty fucking generous if you ask me. But we love the punter and we love the dribbler. And we're just like, let's get this vintage out there to the people that want it most.
Let's get it in the gullets of the nation.
That's right. Gullet up. So you're obviously, you said you've been back in the sheds with the Roosters. You've been hanging out at the club a little bit more. Well, how's that been? Been back at the club, obviously. You know, you left, what, five, maybe more, six, 7 years ago now?
Yes, what was it? 7 years ago?
Yeah. Has that been great to be back around the club? Are you nostalgic about your time there?
It was – so I've only just sort of come back. So it was special to go back to give Jared the jersey. I've sort of been away from it all. I think when you win a comp at a club, and I was there for so long, the way I left was disappointing. But as you get older and you see things for what they are, it was a great move from the club. They got one of the best halfbacks ever. They replaced me with a better player and they got the win. So you see that, you know, you finish and you lose that competitive edge and you see things for what they are.
Yeah.
It was a great move from them. But, you know, when you're at a club like that, like most of those boys we went through from 16 to premiership days, I played there for 12 years.
Yeah.
Guys like Boyd Cordner, Jared, Mitch Orbison, Jake Friend, they're real friends, you know, and you go through footy and you connect with a lot of people, lots of great people, but you have real friends and those brothers that we always mates, brothers for life.
Brothers for life.
So yeah, going back in after being away for a bit, you know, you can feel that love, and it was good to go back in those walls and see my true friends and people in the staff as well that I've had a lot to do with. So if the opportunity works out to go back there and do some development stuff, I'll be open to that.
Was 2018, 2019, around like first week in October, were they tough weekends?
Watching
as
the
in
boys
like watching the boys win the...
From Newcastle?
Yeah.
I think I was pissed most of the time back then. Yeah, the first year was difficult when I left. Obviously, you're proud. You want the best for them, but you're a competitor. So, but it was hard because obviously... I genuinely cared about my mates there. Like, I wanted to see, you know, like I just spoke about those boys that were playing. I'm happy for them.
Yeah.
That's overrides the competitive side of things when it comes to supporting them. But obviously seeing them win. I remember I was in Melbourne, actually. I think I went down for the Melbourne Cup.
Oh, yeah.
So I watched it in a pub in Melbourne, that first premiership. They beat Melbourne, didn't they?
They did.
Sure, that first one.
Yeah.
What year was that?
Yeah, it was Melbourne, then Canberra.
18, yeah, Melbourne and Canberra.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, it was. I enjoyed Newcastle, but it was a different experience. First couple of years I had, the first year I played there, we had a really good year. I teamed up with Kalen there. We were in a side that was lower down the bottom of the ladder, coming off three wooden spoons.
It was a golden point when he gets Manly, your first game. Yeah. When Manly fans say you're fucked.
I had to kick that order, got beers thrown at my head up there, booed out of Newcastle. But yeah, so it was a really enjoyable year. I think about all the years I've played, that first year in Newcastle, new environment, great city up there, getting out of Sydney, getting settled up there, new bunch of boys. I enjoyed my footy there. So watching the grand final was a bit difficult, but I had a good time. I was in a good place, so it was all good.
When do you find out when you're at the Roosters that there's like Kronk whispers going around? Like, when does that sort of come across your desk?
Yeah, that was I've spoken about it before. That was a disappointing thing because I didn't find out till late. But as you get older, like the same thing happens at every club. It's just the way business is. But there was a way it sort of...
Given your history at the club though, right? Like that, there's a different element to it. It's not just like... You know, you've been there for a couple of years, but do you hear about it in the media? Do they come and tell you?
Yeah, it was in the off season, and that was where I was disappointed because it came out and it wasn't sort of up front from the start.
That's pretty fucking hectic, hey? Like not being able to come and speak to you about it.
Yeah, at the time it was disappointing, but
I'm not trying to bring up old wounds. We were talking about just with the Mansour shit the other day.
Yeah.
With Kempe and how like Mansour wasn't told he was leaving the club, even though he might have expected it to come. And then Kempe was saying a story about how Wayne Bennett told him that if he stayed for less money, he'd start in the wing next year. And then the next year he didn't start on the wing. And it's just like, just these little things with NRL. And then, you know, Kempe's like, oh, look, it's just footy.
Yeah.
It's just footy. And I just find that that's like a dismissive way to sort of like paper over what is almost just like poor, like treating people poorly. Do you know what I mean?
No, I agree with you. I think it's the whole game in general. I don't know. I've never been in business or other sport, other jobs. I hear from friends, different mates that work in jobs. There's a bit of snakiness going on in different all parts of life.
Sure.
All parts of jobs. Footy's definitely got that. And that's something I don't like about rugby league, to be honest. There's that dishonesty. It's very, not all of it. How do I put that?
I know you mean that there's an element to it.
There's an element of that, but as you get older, you realise that it's a business and it's about winning and there's a right way to do things and there's a wrong way to do things. Totally agree with you, but these things happen and it's not nice. You know, it's the same thing with criticism in the media, but the media also support the game and there's so much out of it that the players benefit from, as players benefit from. So, and you see that as you get older. Now that I'm going into Triple M, you're being honest and critical about what you're seeing on the field. And when I was a player, you don't win an Origin series, you deserve to get hammered. As I got older, I didn't worry about that stuff. When you're younger and you're a bit more insecure, it affects you.
Mm.
You get a bit older, you get a bit more understanding of the way who pays your bills and how it all works and the whole picture. You know, you live in the dream and it's all part of it. So you surrender to all that and just accept it all. But yeah, there's a part of the game I still don't like. There's a lot of agendas in all walks of life and sport's got that. NRL, cricket, they've all got all their own little agendas. But all in all, rugby league's full of great people and the game's given me and my family a hell of a lot and we owe it a lot.
When you find out about Kronk, do you go into like Robbo's office and be like, bro, what the fuck? Like, how do you react to that, a situation like that?
Me and Robbo had a chat around it because obviously when I heard the news, I've spoke about this before.
Yeah, sorry, I don't know.
No, that's fair enough. Yeah, but I had a chat at the time. I was disappointed with how it unfolded. I understood the situation that Cooper was coming. My decision, there was an opportunity to stay.
Yeah,
at the time I was still on, it's not about figures, but I was on a good contract. The club still wanted me to stay. The role was going to be different. I after that decision, I had a few offers from other clubs, which was flattering. So it was natural to sort of, my ego was a bit dented. And then I looked around and thought there was a few opportunities. Melbourne, there was an opportunity at Manly when Baz was there and Cherry. Yeah. And then obviously yeah, Cronulla was there. There was a few solid clubs that were thereabouts up the top that reached out. So it made me sort of have a bit of a think and thought, you know, it might be a good opportunity to take a different path. And that's sort of how it all occurred.
Is there a party that wishes you stay when you see him win fucking back? You're like,
oh. Well, now in hindsight, I go into the offices the other day and I got the one trophy and they all had 4 or 3. I would have been happy to play off the bench, run off Cooper. Yeah.
You'd have been the best 14 ever, mate.
Yeah, 10 minutes off the bench and win 3 comps. It all looks better when you retire.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Mate, at the end of the day, like I said, I've got a lot of respect for the club.
Mm.
That time was a bit of a hard time. It was disappointing. We both had our honest chats about where I was, how I saw the situation. I was disappointed. They were honest about it after the situation unfolded about where they were going, and it worked out. They won 2 comps, and all the boys obviously speak glowingly about Cooper and his influence there. And yeah, I always had so much respect for Cooper. I realised the situation that he was a better player than me and a winner, and I was falling short. The thing was, the year before, we fell short at Cowboys, and naturally, as a half, you cop the criticism, and these sort of things happen at good clubs, and that's life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately, that is life, yeah. Isn't it? It was... Fuck, it is what it is, right? What do you say?
Still alive.
Yeah. Well, you're sitting here with us, bro.
Yeah, great time.
It was reported in the media that the Johns brothers had a lot to do in wining, dining and 69ing you up to Newcastle.
I missed out on the 69.
Well, fuck. I mean, well, you sold yourself short then, mate. Yeah. How, like, what are they whispering to you to get you to Newcastle?
Yeah, Maddie and Joey were obviously big pushers behind going up there. To be honest, the reason I went up there was, obviously, I spoke about the other clubs. Melbourne, I got a call from Cameron Smith.
Did you?
That was flattering, obviously. After
seriously, yeah.
The irony of
everything.
Of how that all happened. And I got a message from him. I hadn't had much to do with Smithy and got a message. Greatest player ever messages. You get it. It's like... hot girl messaging me, Cam Smith. And so I had a phone call with him, and he was pretty keen. But the different things with their salary cap, I would have gone there for less money, but it was the dynamics of the top 30 and all that sort of stuff. It didn't sort of seem to work out. But I always pinched myself there that if I had gone down there, got the opportunity to play with them.
Imagine that grand final.
I would have been a way better player. I'll put it that way. I think I would have.
Up against the Roosters, though.
Yeah, in that grand final, that would have been biblical.
So, but the thing with Newcastle was just a different thing to what I'd been used to. Like at the Roosters, we were a top 2 side every year. If we didn't win the comp, you're getting hammered.
Yeah.
It was all, in hindsight, it was awesome. You know, that's the best highlights of my career. I look back and think about those teams and playing in that environment. But it was like a weight off the shoulders to go to Newey. Different environment. It was like a rebuilding club. Nathan Brown was really good at the time when I had the meeting, sort of drove back down the highway. It was like a sense of freedom.
Yeah, right.
Called a couple of my mates and just said, like, there's a chance I sort of want to go there. It just feels different. Like, you go off that feel.
Mm.
And, so it had its ups and downs up there. It was obviously a different sort of environment. The club was rebuilding. But like I said, that first 2 years, I had a great time. I loved my time up there.
Is it kind of alluring when you've got Joey and Maddie whispering at you? You know what I mean? Because, like, you would have known him very well, I imagine, by that time through Origin or just through being a fucking professional footballer. But, like, having those two yarn to you, like, talking to you, talking you up, getting you up there, was there something alluring about that? Were you like,
Yeah, they were big. So the first – I had a good story about Joey. I was always – I looked up to Joey all my life as a kid, obviously, as a half.
Yeah.
When the year I debuted – so my relationship started with Joey when I debuted. I was doing recovery with Anthony Minicello. He was injured when he was going through all those bad injuries.
Yeah.
And I was, like, 17 or 18. I'd played about half the season that year and got injured. So we're in the pool swimming. And I got out of the pool and I looked at my phone, and similar to how I had with Cam Smith, butterflies in my stomach. I got a message from Joey saying, it's Joey, give me a ring. And at that age,
Jesus Christ.
Just retired, he's the greatest player of all time.
Yeah.
And you're a young half. I was like, that stuff gives you tingles, you know. I said to Minnie, is that Andrew Johns? And Minnie goes, yeah, he asked for your number. So anyway, I've spoke to him. About an hour and two later, I'm driving up the highway. He asked me to go up for the weekend, spend the weekend with him, and do some stay at my house. We'll do some go to the park. We didn't end up getting to the park. We'll go to the park and go through some plays. And so Minnie ended up picking me up in the city. We drove up. The whole time I was driving up there, I was asking him 100 questions. What's Joey like? What's Joey do? What's all these sort of things? Got to the Burwood. Joey's local. Walked in, and Joey's about day three.
Oh my god!
With Jack Newton, one of the other greats.
Oh yeah,
the great golfer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they were both sitting in the pub. So for an 18-year-old kid, I was just blown away. And
that's crazy, isn't it?
By the end of that night, Joey had his shirt off and his undies on, ball playing with the schooner glass. I learned a lot that night: what foot to play off, yeah, how to play unders. And ended up staying at his house, and so that's where our relationship started. And ever since that day, he's always been a real big fan and supported me.
Yeah.
And Maddie's the same. I used to go down to Maddie's house down at Collaroy when he was living down there. He might still be living there, and he used to just take us out of his spare time, away from any coaching and in media, just to go there and help out young kids. And we'd spend hours just going over ball playing. And so both those guys are big influences in my career. Mm. And you know, people probably don't see that side to them as well. You know, they see them in the media and stuff they're getting paid for, but they do a lot of stuff mentoring away from stuff that people don't see. So, yeah, they've been big influences. And yeah, going to Newcastle, obviously, with the following what they say, that was a big reason why I went there as well.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that they do that sort of stuff. I've heard it mentioned before, but like where they're just doing things again for free off their own bat.
Yeah.
But also like being a young half and being like having them like approach you to be like, hey, let's just like let us help you.
Yeah, well, it gives you belief.
Yeah,
you know? Like when you're that age, any of your heroes talk to you. Like it's like when you're a young kid coming into first grade. Those older players are the ones that either make or break you in a way. Mm. They take you under the wing and give you confidence. I was lucky when I came through, I had a lot of older senior players, Marco Mealy, Craig Fitzgibbon, Craig Wing was there, Minnie, all these boys. When I came in, you know, you got starry eyes when you're that age and you learn, you know, how to treat the young guys off the back of your senior boys. So I learned a lot off all those guys coming through, and I was very lucky that I had a lot of good mentors.
Were you 17 when you debuted? Was that
17, about that skinny.
It's pretty wild, hey, like, because we're
fucking young.
We're similar ages.
17's fucked. Yeah. And you said before about how big the boys are in the NRL, like, it being out there playing against fully grown men at 17 is insane.
Yeah, come around quick. I played Australian schoolboys, captain the Australian schoolboys, went over to Europe, did a big tour. Really good tour, played really well. Couldn't spit that out. Had a really good tour and came back. Ricky Stewart was the coach, so he got me to the Roosters when I was 16. And once again, you talk about people believing in you. He was a big push for me at that age, especially as a young half. He was a great halfback. He kind of sort of invested in me, got me to the club, threw me into the full-time squad when I was sort of 16. I went up and did a couple of, you know, part of the squad, so it's pretty young.
Fucking
and
pretty
then
young.
Sticky ended up getting sacked, so he left before I debuted. But he sort of, the year after Chris Anderson took over, I went into the full-time squad when I got back from the schoolboys tour, and then it just all happened pretty fast. Just ripped into training, started obviously doing a pretty good job there and got a start, so came around very fast. But
fuck yeah. Do you think about it now, like looking back? Like, I guess I don't want this to almost sound too like woo-woo-y, but like when you think about the 17-year-old kid who's coming in and to now like knowing what you know now, is it like, did it all happen too quickly?
Yeah, it did. Like even rep footy stuff.
Yeah.
Like I went in, so I played that year, played about 16 games. The second year I played Origin, but I had a really
big... You played Origin when you were 18 years old?
I was just turned 19.
Just turned 19.
So I had a big year. So the year after, so Chris Anderson was a coach. Freddie took over at the back end of that year.
Yep.
So Freddie was assistant coach. Then next year, Freddie took over. We signed Willie Mason when Mace was coming out of his dog's prime.
Mm. Yeah.
Ogre came, Marco Mealy. So we had like this hard senior pack. And as a young halfback, that was the best. You know, I just played in a dinner suit and just kicked the corners.
Yeah,
and they made you feel like Superman, those boys. So yeah, I had a really good year that year. And then I think there was an injury in the Origin series, maybe Brett Camorley or... one of the rotations that we're all going through. There's about 30 of us getting thrown around year after year. And then there was a bit of talk about it, like leading into the series. And I came into the decider.
I look back,
I actually played pretty good. There was lots of talk over the Origin series and over the years, and it was good and bad. First to put my hand up, but I actually played all right. And then we got our pants pulled down with about 10 minutes to go and lost.
What
so I always think,
that?
If I had won that one, then how the road might have changed.
Yeah, I know.
What year was that?
That started the manifestation of the losses.
Yeah, shit.
But it's life.
What year was that? Do you remember?
2008.
2008, yeah.
Getting thrown into a decider at 19, second year of first grade, is so insane.
Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's very New South Wales.
Yeah.
You know what, but there's no fear then because you got nothing to lose. So I was actually just full of excitement. All your mates are going, you're getting 30 tickets for everyone to come to the game. Yeah. You're not, you know, and I was in a great team. Danny Badiris was his last game. So he was the captain.
Wow.
So all these things, you're walking around with all the old, there was a lot of older crew that were in those Origin teams early days. A lot of older senior players. So I was just excited. They all took me under the wing. And so there wasn't the same sort of feeling that when you're going in after four losses.
Yeah.
The world's about to turn on you when you don't win. So I actually enjoyed those early days.
What about that? Oh, sorry.
Do you think you were ready? Or do you think... If you could pick a year where you think it would have been best for you to go into Origin?
I would have, in hindsight, for performances and me being able to deliver better, I would have been great to be able to wait some time.
Mm.
Like, at that time, I was just playing off instinct. I didn't have a clue about the game. Like, at 18, 19, you're a natural player, but...
Eyes up footy, sort of.
Eyes up footy, which you lose that a little bit sometimes. Sometimes it's good to have that. You've got that freedom, like I spoke about. You don't have fear. You've got no back-to-back pressure. So you're a free spirit at that age. But, I was playing against their halves was Thurston, Lockyer, Billy Slater, Cameron Smith.
Yeah. Well, it's fucking ridiculous.
I remember looking at their team. They had Justin Hodges in the centres, Israel Folau, like Petro Sivanis, like the team.
I was thinking about
Greg English.
I'm a fanboy just going, how was I playing against them?
But like history will be much kinder to you than the media was at the time and the fans were at the time. Like in the moment, it's like, what the fuck aren't we winning? And then you like with hindsight, you look back and you go, oh, like they were against potentially like the greatest rugby league side ever assembled. Like these absolute generational players. When was the point where, you know, your dreams to play NRL, your dreams to play Origin, it's all happening real quick, but then it starts to, like, shift where you start getting fucking hammered. Like, did that take a lot of the enjoyment out of the game for you?
Yeah, it took enjoyment out because it became a stress. Like, I'm a competitor. I'm never someone that's going to ever dog anything, and I'm privileged every time I got an opportunity to play New South Wales. It's a privilege, and to get picked is an honour. So I never took that for granted. And I'm someone who, anyone who's played with me or knows me, I'm 100%. I'm always committed. I'm never going to turn out. I always want to look in and give my best, good or bad. But so it was one of those things that was you're torn between, especially after a lot of losses, you're torn between proud and privileged to be there, and you're obviously there to win. And it's an honour. But there was always that knowing what might come if you lost.
Yeah.
Not consciously, but there's that there. And you said, did it take away your enjoyment? There was definitely periods through my career where it was a roller coaster. Always prided myself, regardless of how the series went, of backing up for club footy, and I always felt like I did a good job at that. I'd pride myself on being a resilient character, and I wanted to just get back on and do it for my teammates. And it's a job to do. You still, at the end of the day, you take out all the bullshit. You're still living the dream, and you're playing first grade, and you're getting paid a shitload of money to play halfback.
Yeah.
So you got to remember that in and around all that anxiety, but there's definitely a roller coaster that goes into all the NRL boys or any rep player now. It's a tough slog, and you see that when you retire, but it's also what you play for, and you enjoy that in a sick way. But yeah, when you're winning those Origin series, I think footy and life would have been just that little bit funner.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think if you asked Thurston, you were like, mate, it was fucking amazing. Yeah. You know, or Cameron Smith there because they were winning. They were winning absolutely everything. Well, let's talk about when you were brought back in, game three, 2019.
You and I actually on a couch together at home filming ourselves.
We were. And it got fucking tight at the end. Yeah. In fact, it got extremely uncomfortable. Mm. But then I like to think, and now I get to ask you, that the pass you threw was just like a culmination of your life's work.
Let's make it sound heaps better too.
Come on, let's pump it up. Yeah. Like, put some fucking music on there.
Yeah. Like, I'm not fucking losing this game of footy. That's what I saw. I saw a man that was prepared to throw it.
My mentality, honestly, that game was, I'm not losing. Like, I can't lose.
Yeah.
Like, and it worked out in the end. I was rooming with Turbo. Yeah, obviously Manly fans. I was rooming with Turbo. How cool and calm is he?
He's the man.
He made my whole week super calm. He's just so natural and relaxed. And so I roomed with him. he was like half asleep on game day when I was like, man, I need to win this, so I'm going to, like, my life's going to finish.
It's not like his brother Jake, is he? He's having a panic attack in the corner.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I ended up, obviously, a little combination, seeing him out there and hit him and the work him and Fergo did. Everyone pumps my pass out. I did nothing.
Mate, you're involved in it. You started the fucking thing.
But, yeah, honestly, that was that ranks. When you finish, you think about different euphoric feelings when you played and off the field. The euphoric feelings when you played. And the two things that stand out for me is the grand final and that Origin series. Just the feeling you get after the game, just the boys hugging and crying and, you know, that you cannot replace that in any other way in your life. Mm. Grand final for me, I remember just crying for 20 minutes. Like, yeah, everyone's happy, but I was just generally crying. Mm. I remember my mum was in the sheds and she's like, what's wrong? I was like, I don't even know. Like, it's just this total euphoria feeling you can't even explain. Yeah. And I had the same feeling when we won in 19. And so, yeah, those, you know, when you finish your career and you have all these, you know, there's games you remember just, you know, it might have been a local game at Allianz. The highlights because one of your teammates done something great or you come up with a winning play, you think about all them, but those ones are just, they'll always be memories for life.
Yeah.
When Teddy Cross was just, did you almost, I don't think I've seen footage of how you reacted.
I think I went like that. Just felt 80,000 people all through my body. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, that team coming back, like it was, when I say easy, it was so easy to come back in as an older guy because you just do your job. Jimmy Maloney was there. They had a big couple of games. And the whole team, just all those young boys that I hadn't really played with before, like Turbo.
Was Trell?
Trell. I don't think Trell played that game. I played with him at the Roosters, obviously.
Of course.
But, yeah, like Cam Murray, all these new generations had that much confidence. So it was good to run out from a different energy than what I'd sort of played in before, where we were on the back end of a lot of losses. They'd come off, I think, two or three losses leading into that series. Two or three wins.
Yeah.
So it was a different energy to go into.
How would you describe the difference in that energy? Was it almost, when you're in that eight in a row, that sort of environment, was it just a bit more desperate almost? Or
somber?
Somber?
Yeah. It was all, the early days when I played was unreal. Like, we went really close. Like, everyone talks about the losses. There was 2011, we were one pass off locking the series in because we won. We just lost in game one, had a big win here.
Mm.
There was so many series there, early days, and then I think back on where there was just the difference between one pass and one.
They were really tight.
There was a couple there where it was super embarrassing where you'd go up. There's definitely two series. I think it was 2011 and 2015 where they beat us by about 50.
Mm.
And being a halfback in those teams is horrible. We had no possession. We're up there in Queensland and they just destroyed us.
Yeah.
But majority of those series were really tight. So there was always hope. Yes. Even though people look at the big picture and all the losses. But a lot of those series, it goes down to the wire every series. So every series you're going in with hope and you believe as a New South Wales side, you're going to win. So, yeah, it's funny when you reflect on Origin, especially for me. People ask me now, and I can speak from a bit more humour.
Yeah.
When you're playing, it's pretty dark. I don't laugh at all.
Yeah.
But now I can see it for what it was. Man, I was playing against some of those players you play against. Like, they were so good. And you take your competitive hat off when you finish. Billy Slater, Jonathan Thurston, Cooper Cronk. Darren Lockyer, like I remember playing him as an early player in club footy too, and they were just so good, just on another level. That's why they're immortals.
Yeah.
Well, you say you take your competitive hat off. When you see Joey, who, you know, in some, like in media afterwards, like refusing to talk, you remember that series?
Oh, yeah. he's just sitting there and he's just like, there.
Like, do you think that's what made him the greatest of all time? Is that he's just that competitive level is just so much more passionate than everyone else, you know?
Yeah.
So much more driven or something.
Joey's just the most competitive person I've met.
Yeah.
Like in and around footy circles. Obviously having a lot to do with him. Even when you meet Joey now and he watches a game of footy, it's like he's 18 still trying to make his way.
Yeah.
You know, he's an immortal and the greatest ever with nothing to prove.
Yeah.
And that's that fire in the belly. And you hear Matty speak about that. I've heard Matty speak about his brother or players that have played with Joey, just how ruthless he was. Things he'd say to teammates on the field that was never personal, but it was just like, I am a win. Like, it's Michael Jordan style.
Yeah. Like The Last Dance.
Yeah. Mm. And it's just the passion Joey has for the game. That's something I learned early. I've always had that same passion as a halfback. You know, I think any player that's played for a long period of time especially in the halves. If you don't have that desire and passion, you don't last. And I think all the top shelf halves that are still playing, you know, I'm sure Cherry and Adam Reynolds, Jonathan Thurston, definitely, all these guys would talk about the love they have for the game. You need that obsession to be a really good halfback. And I learned a lot of those things or it reaffirmed things when I met Joey and those guys early, and I was like, man, they just, footy's porn for them.
That's great, dude. Oh, that's good stuff.
That's good stuff.
What do you think it is about Origin that, like, and I mean, there's obviously unrealistic expectations from people like us and media generally, right? Like fans. But like,
we don't know what we're talking about.
We don't know. Well, we specifically don't know what we're talking about. But like, where, you know, even like Nathan Cleary wins three like premierships back to back. He's obviously a fucking animal. But like, he just still hasn't done it in Origin yet. Like, what is it about Origin like that can prohibit someone like him from like not like proven himself there yet, even though he's proved himself everywhere else, or at least that being the perception?
Yeah, it's a hard question to answer. What is it about Origin? Origin's just such a different beast, and I think each series is different, each game's different. Depends where your team is in those series. But in saying that, the graders just step up, don't they? Like, you look at Lockyer, how many moments do you think of an Origin series, and Lockyer's just been there? Mm. Wally Lewis, Joey. Mm. Nathan's, in my opinion, just on the verge of just going just as close to all them.
Yeah.
He hasn't been bad in Origin. What's he won?
No, he hasn't been
But that dominance that they talk about. But Nath's only, what's he, only 24?
25, 26. Yeah. Like, he's got time.
You hear talk about Joey and when they talk about Origin, a lot of them speak about their best days with the back end of their 20s.
Yeah.
So Nath's done a hell of a job in Origin. I think he's won two or three series.
Yeah.
And I think his best days now, with the way he's going and projecting in his career, I think the next few years he's going to be Wally Lewis style in those games. He's head and shoulders ahead of everyone.
Fucking yeah. Oath, eh? Three comps.
If we can stay on Nathan just for a second, I think Joey said the other night that it was the best game he's seen him play. Is that what he said?
Against the Broncos. You said it after.
Did you watch that game? Yeah. And what's your opinion on how he's playing at the moment?
Oh, I love him. I've had a bit to do with Nathan. Tyrone May's his best mate, so I spent a lot of time. I was a bit of a closet Penrith fan when I was away because become really good friends with his family, obviously the three brothers.
Yeah.
And then met a fair few of the Penrith boys through them, and obviously Nathan. So, bit of a closet Penrith fan. I get up early and watch the games. Just his evolution, the way he keeps just getting better. I think as a competitor or as a fan and media, everyone watches and you're waiting for chinks each year. Mm. Like, we do it with everyone. Or you sort of watch the game and how are they going to go now? Is this player keep getting better? With Nathan, he just keeps getting better.
Mm.
And like all the great ones, he finds ways to adapt his game and improve his game and improve his teammates around him. And yeah, the grand final was obviously legendary, the way he played. But the game the other night, I think the reason Joey and that was speaking so glowingly about it was the way he played and all the subtle ball playing stuff that he played with, and just keeps adding things to his game. And I think I said it the other day, I think like the way they're playing, like if you win three comps, most teams, well, it hasn't been, how many times has it happened? Since like Parramatta?
It hasn't happened since the 80s.
But you sort of see some sort of, you know, cracks or ego or lack of effort areas where with them, they just keep turning up week in, week out. And he obviously drives a lot of that with Yoey there and all their senior players. But, man, they're pretty impressive. Not only players, but guys.
Yeah.
Well, that try set up for Tungo, where he's just sort of like showing, like Joey skipping.
That,
like, were you just like touching yourself? Were all you sevens out there just like fucking.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I suppose that's the stuff you learn, you know, play slow, tempo, show and go, double pump, all the stuff that you get taught as a half that's the prototype of what to do as a ball player. He just put it on display, so. Might have to use that for the development kids or the halves program I'm going to do.
Just show that. Do this, boys.
Do this, and you'll be great. Were you boys in comedy or anything?
Mate.
You're fucking funny. You're going good, man.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate that. Mate, we went to uni together.
Okay, yeah.
And we just, like, the way we talk on the podcast is how we'd be talking on nights out, right? We'd be in a corner together just fucking chewing each other's ear off.
Yeah.
If you want to come in and you know, fucking yarn with us, keep up or fuck off. That's
yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
back end of benders and shit.
Yeah.
And then when he when we came back to Sydney, we didn't see each other quite as much as we did because when we were living together in Bathurst. Yeah. But then
he went to uni at Bathurst.
We went to uni at Bathurst, yeah. But he was producing at Triple M. So he was doing like Drive or whatever the night show is or whatever. And so when everyone would leave, he snuck me in and we just started doing it. And for 5 years, no one gave a fuck. We had like 30 listeners. And
so you just built it out. Works, you just build it up.
And we just built it up over time. Yeah.
I was saying, had you done comedy or something?
Oh, no. We just talked.
Just explaining.
Yeah.
No, it's fucking unreal.
But, thanks, mate, man. So.
That guru looks fucking. Is he just a genius?
He's a rugby league. You talk about
the rugby league band porn for the Johns.
He just knows everything.
Like,
Guru
is just. Yeah. He watches every game, every weekend. Yeah. He watches big games twice. He fucking lives.
He knows all like, the 20s kids, everything. Hey?
Everything.
Yeah. Mate, he watches SG Ball. He watches fucking Harold Matz. He watches New South Wales Cup, Queensland Cup. He watches everything.
Didn't he say one day, he's like, I watched 11 games of rugby league in like a 12 or
It was like Saturday.
Grade. Yeah, it was like all the junior grades, all the first grades, and then watches them again to make sure he hasn't missed anything. Or like on Sunday night, he put out a podcast at like midnight. Like he was up in the studio, like going through all the game, like through the whole round, like put out an hour thing. It's like he fucking grinds his dick to the bone.
Yeah, he loves
it. Works real hard, but he's good.
So it took you like 5 years to get going.
Yes.
Well, we've been full time for 3. We can go on for 8, so you're 5.
It wasn't.
It was a hobby though.
Like we were like, this is the fucking, the thing we're going to do. We just did it for fun.
Yep.
And then, well, you know, people just started noticing it. Like, we also were, like, super embarrassed about, like, promoting it. Like, you know, like, oh, guys, check out my podcast.
Yeah,
it's got 30 like, fucking listens.
Like, let's get a bit shy.
Well, it's worked, mate. Yeah. Fucking love it now. Yeah. But it was just a real slow burn. And then, you know.
And obviously, no one knew the fuck we were. Like, we didn't play the game.
No.
It's better that way anyway.
Yeah.
And we're never trying to give out fucking nuanced rugby league opinion.
Yeah,
that's cool
because you can add a bit of both, you know.
Yeah. Still sweet. We're emotional. We're passionate.
We are passionate. And it's speaking of passion. 2013.
We contest that
we won that game.
Yeah, we won it.
And that you technically it should read Mitchell Pearce zero premiership.
That's all I'm hanging on to.
No, but what was that? What was that week like? That build up. You want to? How do you reflect on that?
Yeah, just obviously two teams. Obviously, you boys are Manly fans, but you look at the rosters from both teams. Honestly. Like, I don't think you see too many high-quality teams playing against each other. Like, the whole team, our whole team was just unbelievable.
Stacked.
And even Manly, but you just had that crew were just unbelievable. Just the whole team. So, the standard of footy, I think you would have watched the semi-final we played. It was a 4-0 win to us.
Yep.
When we got the week off, that was the hardest game of footy I've ever.
You beat us, like, 5 times that year. It was so fucking annoying.
We had great, like, both teams, like, you know, it was just a high-quality game. But that 4-0 win we had was the hardest game I've ever played because the standard, like, people would think 4-0 would be just a shit-ass game of footy. But, like, there was that much ball movement. It was just that both teams' defence was so good. So we knew what was coming in the grand final. We lost in 2010. We're all young kids. And as weird as it sounds, losing that, we're sort of just happy to be there. You obviously want to win, but when you lose when you're young, you think it's just going to keep happening. Like, so much success was coming early, especially for me. You'd play rep footy and then you're in a grand final. We had good players. So I was like, this is just going to happen. And then it didn't for a couple of years. So when we got back in that 13 grand final, I remember being in the sheds and that was the most intense I've felt a dressing room that I've been in. Like, you could just see all the boys were just fucking on and the energy of the room. And me personally, I was like, it was a similar to that 19 one. Like, fuck, you got to win this.
Yeah.
Like, we got to win this. Yeah. And the game itself, like, it was, you're right, we were backs against the wall. Manly went in front 10-0, I think. Steve Maddie scored in my corner. I think I missed the tackle. Nah, I didn't. But Steve Maddie scored, and then we had 20 minutes to go to climb back into the game.
Yeah.
I remember Sonny Bill Williams was just huge for us. Just grabbed the boys and said, follow me. The Wolfman had a bit of a shocker, so we just kept targeting his edge.
Yeah, he wasn't comfortable under the high one, was he?
Yeah. But, just both two quality teams. And as I said, the feeling is just so good.
Yeah.
What's it like when Sonny Bill comes into your team? Was it that year or the year previous that he came
back? No, that was Sonny's first year, yeah.
What is just, is he like a god walking around?
He is, yeah. And especially at that age when we were younger and we all looked up to him. Mm. He's a god anyway now, even if you see him.
Still a god.
If you're 80 and looking at him, he's still a god.
Yeah, yeah.
Still got a good relationship with Sonny, still speak to him a bit. That year when he came in, it was just like, you talk about and we all have those blokes that you just want to follow, and just a man. And at that age, he had everything, didn't he? He had the looks, the style. Yeah.
Gorgeous.
Who he was, the professionalism that we, like, we'll probably, at that age, we'll still finding our way. Like, the crew that we had coming through, like, to be honest, the year before, we were a bit of a loose culture. We're kind of still learning that professionalism type of thing. And when Sonny walked in the door, you just want to follow him, you know, just going for yoga, doing yoga with him and all these sort of things that wasn't really doing that before. Mm. Just because he's doing it, you want to do it. So he just had that influence, the way he trained. And then just in the games, just his, just in big moments, you know, you talk about Lockyer's, Thurston, Smith, these guys that just want the ball. He was a back rower, but he would just step up in big moments. Like, you just look at his eyes, he had that eye of the tiger, and he'd just fucking give me the ball. He did that at all levels. He delivered for us that in the grand final. And, yeah, just a superstar and a champion guy, very humble. I was blown away playing with Sonny, and it's a bit of insight to the way he is. Like, you think for someone that professional after a loss, he'd sort of deal with it quite well, but he was so hard on himself after games.
Like, is that right?
Yeah, like, and you speak about Joey and any high achiever that I've played with, the best of players have all got that trait, but Sonny was so hard on himself, and he'd take losses really personal. And that rubs off, you know, even that as a player, you see how much a leader cares, and all those little things add up into your makeup to realise that this is the standard. The other thing with Sonny, all teams do it now. You come in with notepads. So all the coaches, the last 10 years, 8 years, everyone's doing it. You come into video with a notepad. Most teams are sort of forced to do it. Right. Sonny was the original of doing that.
Is that really? Right?
So he was doing all this stuff before it was cool. He'd come in with a notepad, and then all the other boys started bringing notepads in, and you know, if Sonny's doing it, I'm going to start writing notes.
Is that right?
Yeah, he'd come in and it was a bit weird at the start because no one was doing it. You'd just sit in video, half the boys have a hoodie on. Sonny would come in with his notepad and he'd be writing all the specifics down. And so, yeah, all those little things.
Would you go and ask him then, be like, what the fuck are you doing, nerd? Like,
you go over there and he's just drawing it.
Do you know what I mean? Like, do people just start copying him? Like, you know, the next day it's like, oh, fucking, I've always been doing it. Like, do you know, or is it like a thing where he sort of explains to you why he's doing it? Or do you just, like, do you know what I mean? Like, does everyone just start copying Sonny Bill, like what he's doing? Or is there some sort of like, does he start talking to you guys about why this works for him or why he does these extra things?
It wasn't as much like that. We had a lot of strong personalities. Like our team, we had a lot of superstars all across the field. So, you know, and like we had Boydie there, Jared, all these boys were all pretty staunch in their own way.
Yeah.
But yeah, Sonny just sort of went about his own business. But you definitely, like people, when you have superstars like that in your team and strong leaders, it just starts to infiltrate through the team. And those specific things stood out, you know, the way, you know, going to yoga, doing all these extras. A lot of the boys were doing stuff themselves, but he had a big influence on that. And the notepad stuff was definitely something I remember because no one was doing it. You're a bit sort of hesitant at the start when you're young and no one else is doing it. But he's a leader and he just went, this is what we do. And it's, I always tell people that because every team now has a notepad. Majority of every team has a notepad. And he was like the OG of notepads.
He was the original notepad guy.
Yeah.
What's an upset Sonny look like after a loss? Like when you say he takes him real personal, like what's that look like? Is he in tears and shit or is he just like down?
No, just take it per, like he'd take losses hard, like we all did. But it was just something that really stood out because he was really hard on himself and really, just really hard on himself. Some people might not perceive that from great players. They come across calm and which they are, but it's just, yeah, he was really hard on himself. The best players I've ever played with, I've got that same mentality, you know, winning's everything and that's what you're there for. Mm.
Was that a coach whisper a year, 2013?
No, he wasn't. Was he there?
Stubbsy? Is that what he was? Bradley? John Bradley?
I didn't have anything to do with him.
Maybe that was 18, 19.
Might have been 18, 19.
Have you ever had anything to do with him?
Nah.
We just, the other day, he's got a book coming out, and he said that he bet Kevy Walters that the Roosters would beat the Raiders, and if the Roosters lost, he'd cut off both his pinkies. And if the Raiders win, Kevy had to cut off his pinky, and Kevy's like, nah.
So he just blackmails people.
Yeah, dude. I'm
pinky
like,
bet.
Yeah, pinky bet. I'm like, what the fuck's this got to do with like mentalist coaching, dude? This is just like Yakuza shit cutting off your fucking. Anyway.
Was In that 2013 grand final, obviously Manly just destroy the Rabbitohs in the prelim. Was part of you wanting to play the old foe in a grand final? I think we've had that since the 20s or the 30s maybe, Rabbitohs Roosters grand final.
Yeah, we would have gone close. We lost in 2014. We played, we lost to Penrith in the first semi.
Yeah.
So we got minor premiers. That was probably, best chance of going back-to-back because it was obviously, there was only one team that had been back-to-back before that.
Which was like Broncos or Bulldogs. Broncos, or
I think. It was Broncos, but it was one of the Super Leagues, so I don't know if we count that, no offence. And so the team before that, I think it was the Dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a lot of our talk going into pre-season and all through the year, that was our goal to go back-to-back. And we were in front with about 2 minutes to go and there was an error at the backfield and then they ended up beating us in the first semi. So we had to do it the hard way and we ended up getting beat by South in the semi. They were fresh. They were too good for us in the end.
So then you would have swapped sides.
Yeah. So if we had won that, it's a had a should have, would have.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah,
good
yeah.
when you retire.
Yeah. Yeah, you can go back.
But that would have been the best opportunity when I was there to have played South in the grand final. That would have been pretty cool.
Do you hate them as much as like the media make out that like fucking South and Roosters hate each other?
You sort of want to hate them, don't you? Because it creates for a big spectacle. There was definitely hate there. You know, even when you go around the east, the as soon as you go past into Maroubra there, the hatred starts to come in, yeah. The Bra Boys, and everyone's got their South jerseys on there. There's definitely a hatred, I reckon. And the fans, when you go to the games, there's genuine hatred with the fans. And
a punch on the other night.
There was actually a punch on, wasn't there?
See that?
No.
Boys throwing down.
In the members section. At the members section of
the game the other night. Oh, fuck
yeah. Bottom, like I missed it.
Yeah.
But, there was always, the atmosphere there, the crowd, they always sold the stadium out and there was always a massive atmosphere. So, there is genuine hate there, but from the fans more than the players. Like, players always respect their opposition. Like, and most of the time you know the boys, but when it came to putting on the jersey, the boys were pretty serious about wanting to beat South when I was there.
You were talking before about how your old man obviously played for Balmain. You're the son of a legend of the game. What was it like, I guess, coming through? Did you enjoy that? The fact that like you were always sort of immediately compared to your old man or just like, you know, that general, was there more of an expectation?
Yeah, it was funny. Like always people ask me that question a lot now since I'm older and, you know, some people don't grow up with a father. Some people, I was very blessed. I had two really good parents and... you don't realise when you're a kid that your dad's a bit of a legend. You sort of know that he was in and around footy, but I didn't realise the way he lived his life. I thought it was normal, you know, getting up at 5 a.m. Dad was sort of a bit of ahead of his time, I suppose, when he was playing as well, the way he trained. So the way I used to watch him as I was a kid, it sort of taught me a lot of habits of how to be professional. I just thought that was normal, all the way I trained and just everything, the way he lived his life. So, but on top of that, probably when I was a kid, I create a fair bit of insecurity subconsciously. I wouldn't walk around talking about it, but as you get older and you look back and you see different patterns of your behaviour, there was definitely some rebelling in and around those days. And it was probably subconscious, trying to be your own man. That was just the way I interpreted the situation, I suppose, and created a bit of insecurity. And then obviously coming through footy and then different... criticism and that type of stuff can sort of trigger that stuff probably. So there was definitely that little bit of way I perceived the situation. And I was always proud to have dad, and I'm privileged that I've been able to grow up with a father that taught me the way to be successful.
Mm. Who do you think the best coach you played under was, in your opinion? Best for your game, best for your personality?
Robbo definitely was the best coach I've had. The thing I take out of coaches is you get so many different perspectives from coaches and you pick up different things. The best guy I've come in contact with as a mentor, and I speak about him a lot, is a guy called Alan Bell. Talk about the Johns boys.
I was going to say, is that the guy that Maddie or Joey?
So he's a really good friend of mine. Johnny Lewis, the great boxing trainer, actually put me on to Belly. It was in 2014. I got in trouble with the yellow dress drama in the city. And Johnny came and had a chat with me and he said, mate, go on, I want you to have a chat with Alan Bell. He's the smartest guy he's ever spoke to, great man. Just had so much respect in and around these people, the John's boys and in and around boxing world and all that sort of stuff. So I started speaking to Belly And honestly, we used to speak on the phone 3 times a week for an hour at a time.
Is that right?
I used to go and catch up with Belly and sit down with him and go over just footy notes, all the stuff that he'd given from Joey and Maddie and all through his coaching career. And he really took me under the wing, and he was a real mentor. And he's someone I still go to now. Like anything about life, I talk to Belly. He's getting older now, but just a big mentor for me and taught me a lot of stuff. And sometimes in life, like, you can just click with some people and the messages get through. Mm. And he was just someone who puts the most complicated things so simple. He was a big influence through the Newtown days, Newtown Jets, Newcastle, setting up Newcastle. That's where the Johns boys had a fair bit to do with him. So he's got a lot of respect in the game. But for him to sort of take me under the wing, give me a lot of time, and yeah, we've had a really good friendship and relationship. So he's probably the guy I've learnt more than anything off away from footy. But as far as a head coach, Trent Robinson would be the best coach I've had. Yeah. Just highly intelligent, just to create a winning environment, and I played my best footy under him.
You've mentioned in this interview how much of an impact like mentors and ex-players and senior players have had on your career to date, or your career generally. Is that why you're feeling this like this urge to give back and mentor the next generation because of how you were treated by the people you've mentioned?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think I've always tried to, you know, be there for younger boys, and it's our duty, isn't it, as men to pass on your knowledge and look after each other. And, you know, I think I've got a lot to give back. I think when I was playing, I always tried to look after the youngest guy that was in the squad, and because that was the kind of nurturing that I got when I came through. And, you know, you respect your elders and you learn off older people. I've always gravitated in my life to older men, like Belly, for instance, or these type of people, because that's where you learn your most knowledge. You know, I'm always open ears to anyone that's... I've just gravitated to older blokes. I love hearing stories and learning. That's just the personality I am, maybe the way I was raised. But yeah, I'd love to give back a mentor where I can, and I've made some changes in my life and feel like I've been through good and bad. So that's definitely a path I'd like to go down.
Now you're in the media. Now you're on the other side, the dark side, you might call it. How are you going to go, given your own experiences as a player, like criticising, for lack of a better word, players generally? Like, have you thought about how you'll go about that, or like the way that you'll approach those moments when you have to be critical?
Yeah, I think being honest is the key, isn't it? Like, even when I was playing, like, you're there to be honest. It's no different when you're playing footy. You're in, or with your mates, with your boys. Like, you're honest with each other. It's honesty and trust is where it's built. And I think when I was playing, if you're in a good system, when everyone's honest with each other, that's just the way it works. So I think you'll have to teach me. But I suppose when I'm doing the commentary or...
You'll learn nothing from us.
I think going down that path of just being honest about how you see things is the way to go. I'm only learning. It's a great opportunity. I did my first game on the weekend and, you know, it's good to... From an ex-halfback watching games, you see things, obviously, how you would have done things or... So you just say it how it is, I suppose. Mm. But yeah, I think the thing with the media, majority of the media when you're playing is positive. Like at the end of the day, the media is supporting the game.
Yep.
The players get a hell of a lot out of it. Majority of it's positive. There's obviously, like we spoke about earlier, there's agendas in everything. And every now and then there's a couple of low blows. The off-field stuff, I find with the sponsors and everything now, you understand that that's part and parcel. But there's always some agendas that people ram home a bit harder with some things and overdo the boys' fuck-ups. You know, that's just part of life. But yeah, I'd like to just be honest about things, I suppose, and say it how I see it. I'm stuttering.
It's probably it's not a bad way to go about it, though. Just tell the truth and be honest. I don't know who the journo was. It was like, oh, Jackson Hastings, mate. He just like he got dropped and he purposely missed fucking New South Wales Cup training. Comes out, it was complete bullshit. Just didn't happen.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Like, so after he got dropped, they were like, oh yeah, he was given the opportunity to go and train with the Cup side, and he's like, nah, I'm going home. And then it was like, oh no, they actually weren't even training. And he just went home. And you're just like, what the fuck, dude? Yeah. That's like so unnecessary.
Yeah, that sort of stuff. That's what I was saying. Like when there's an agenda like that. As players, that's when you get the shits, I think.
Yeah.
The truth's not right, or there's rumours coming out that are affecting your reputation.
Yeah.
That stuff's not fair. That's just a lie. If you've done the wrong thing, I've done plenty of them, and it's, you know, you understand that it's justified most of the time. Sometimes it's extended a little bit and bit of salt and pepper thrown on the top, but
always
majority of the time, you understand if you've done the wrong thing. But yeah, the lies are not.
Like, have you ever had to fucking confront a journo? Like, oi, what the fuck, bruh?
trying to think.
You ever bent Teo to bloke?
Oh yeah,
what did he do?
Oh, he just told us he was. He had a bit of a fucking.
Oh yeah,
good man, Ben Teo.
Yeah, I don't really know him that well.
Yeah, no, he's great man.
Funny.
Yeah.
There was a video came out like back when he was playing for South, and Teo and Danny's like there to try and do like the media scrum, and Ben's just going, "No one's going to talk to you, mate. No one likes you here."
Just pissing him.
Yeah, just fuck off. Smashed him too. Like, oh my god!
In front of everyone.
Yeah, everyone.
In front of the media scrum. It's
great footage. It's really funny stuff. Mate, thanks for coming on. It's been really nice to meet you and here, you know, have a bit more of a chat. You've obviously got an interesting story, and like I think to your like what you're sort of like you've got a lot of knowledge to pass on to younger players because of the way your career's gone up and down, right? Like there's almost no one better to be able to sort of speak like nurse younger players through the what I imagine is a fucking hurricane of like life when you become a professional footballer. But yeah, mate, we really appreciate it. Good luck. Go well with the footy and the podcast, Talking Footy. You and Toddy Carney.
Footy Talk.
Yeah. Footy talk, sorry.
And is it talking about the games on the weekend? Are you talking about footy generally, about life? What's the sort of...
Yeah, at the moment we're just talking footy.
Yep.
Just on wrap-ups from the game. Adam Peacock does the host there on Triple M, so on Mondays. So, nice. But no, it's been good for me and Toddy. We're great mates from footy days, and it's good to reconnect. Both had our dramas, and Toddy's doing really well. He's been sober for nearly 2 years now.
Oh, sick.
He's going well. He's got a little one, and life's flowing for him. Doing a lot of work with troubled kids up in Queensland as well.
Good on him.
Back a lot and doing some really good stuff. So it's good for us to connect on there. And I love you boys too.
Thanks, man.
Had a good laugh. I was in Bali and I was on the lounge sitting there watching some of your stuff for a while. So keep us laughing.
Yeah, mate.
Thanks, mate. We'll do our best. Well, anyway, all the best with it. And thanks for coming on.
Thanks very much.
Good man. Cheers.
Thank you.
Could you two just not talk anymore?
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.